Well, thank you very much, Brian. I enjoy getting out to these conferences, and let me just put this around, because I always find I learn as much from you folks as I do in terms of in the presentations, in terms of what's going on in the industry. And so that's very important to us. Also, the fact it was fun to see the opening presentations. You get any closer to me, it ain't gonna look very good. But my wife will tell you there isn't a good angle. So you know, it's always a pleasure to be able to come to this part of the country, because I'd share with you, as our opening speaker Terry pointed out, we looked at his CAB acceptance rates. Remember what that number was? 43%. I remember it very well, because our national average is 24. In other words, about double, and that's kind of the kind of cattle we get out of this part of the country. They do extremely well in terms of hanging on the rail. They do extremely well in meeting consumer satisfaction, and thank you for what you're getting done. So we appreciate the supply. You help our supply immensely. I'm going to jump in and talk a little bit about kind of the whole area, a couple themes, and that is, one, how do we get premiums on these cattle? Because I want to share with you that has really changed in the last 4 or 5 years. Folks, there's a lot of dollars out there for what you're doing in terms of the use of these technologies, but we got to work at a little bit capturing those dollars, and we'll touch a little bit on how we do that, and touch a little bit on the management strategies, and I also want to get into what the consumer is really asking for, because for you to get a premium, that consumer has to be willing to pay for it, and so that's an important part of it. I used to always start the talk a little bit of background on our company, and talk about that we are a marketing company, and that that basically we license restaurants and retailers. Our structure is that we're a nonprofit type organization. I quit doing that because I was at one of these, and a wife was sitting next to her husband, and she poked her husband and said, "You know, you ought to be able to relate to this talk, because that's the kind of operation you run." And so I quit doing that discussion on the nonprofit part and so on. But because we do not behave like a nonprofit, you can't in this business. You got to be aggressive. You got to go after the marketplace. And so with that, we'll jump right into a few points. And Brian, I'll try to buzz through these fairly quickly to get you back on schedule. One of the coolest parts of this conference is that what you do has technology. Really, it relates to exactly what a technology ought to do. And you're one of the very few areas in terms of technology advancement, in terms of the beef cattle industry, that does accomplish this next goal. And that is, our goal in this industry has got to be providing a quality eating experience for that consuming public. If we miss that target, if we talk about being in the grass business, we talk about being in the cow business, stocker business, whatever, that bottom line, particularly with cattle prices where they are today, do not lose sight of the fact you better be providing a quality eating experience, or we've got some alternatives that we're going to have to compete with, and it's not going to be a very pleasant journey. And so we'll get into a little of what that consumer is really looking for. Amazing. This has been alluded to a lot. Boy, it just being around this industry for a long period of time, I just looked back. I did this for a class that I was lecturing to, and it just astounded me. If we compare January 1 of 2013, this year, to January 1, 09, live cattle prices, a positive, up 48%. I'd have told you back here in 09, I didn't think we could sell beef for that kind of price. Still amazes me, and I'll share with you some of what we're selling beef for today and selling it successfully. Feeder calves, up 72%. If you look at cull cows, up 79%. The flip side of that is what it costs to take care of these cattle. Look at what corn prices did, up 85%. That's an imbalance as far as our industry is concerned in terms of grain relative to animal agriculture. I think over the next 4 or 5 years, most folks I talk to and listen to from an economic perspective is you're going to create more balance here in terms of this feed cost relative to what we sell, but we're going to have to continue to sell beef at the prices that we're selling it for, and we'll talk to you a little bit what we're trying to get done as we work with that side of the industry. This points out, if you look back into 2000, beef was 7% higher than pork. Those two lines are pretty close together. We're 78% higher than chicken. Yes, we had a pretty good spread right there. Look where we're at in 2012, same figure, same calculation. Look where these lines, how much they spread. We're 35% higher than pork. We're 148% higher than chicken. Folks, we're competing for that center of the plate in terms of trying to get beef on that plate. That's a huge spread, and that better be a quality eating experience up here for beef in terms of producing the right kind, or we've got a real risk as an industry. So in terms of what has happened, though, the positive that's happened in terms of beef demand is if you take a look at what the consumer is doing with their money and what they're telling us, and I'll tell you a little bit later in the presentation why this is occurring. Look, what we had the economic recession here in 07, 08, 09, and really things were pretty flat in terms of what kind of beef. Not a lot of change. The red line there is our product. The other is USDA low choice or lower choice type product. Look what's happened to the premium choice area as compared to what's happened to the choice part. That consumer is paying more dollars for this higher quality product. I could plot you the same line for prime. In other words, your target as a breeder is to capture this area from a standpoint of getting at the premium type dollars and figuring out how to market and put in place a program that can get you to these dollars that exist. Because this is where it looks like the consumer has gone and companies have gone, and I'll share that part with you in a little bit more specifics later in a part of the presentation. The other part that's intriguing to me is what we're selling beef for. You know, this line here, $2, we were convinced, basically, and that's cutout carcass value. We said we couldn't sell beef above $2. And we look at where we've been at now, looking at the red line here, 2013, the dotted blue line, basically being 2012. If you look at those lines, look at the number of times we've been above 210, we've been 215, we've been as high as 216, 218. Folks, we are selling beef way above that $2 market, but I think that consumer is getting a lot more fickle because if it's a bad eating experience, I assure you we know about it in terms of this kind of price points. They are going to let us know that they were not happy with that product they purchased at the price they purchased it for. So how is that impacted? You'd say, okay, if we're selling, are we growing? Well, I'm happy to share with you 2 weeks ago, and that's one of the few company pieces I'll actually put in here. If you look at where we were at in 09 that we've kind of used as a bit of a barometer in terms of we were at 653 million pounds. This past year, we closed our books 2 weeks ago, we're at 865 million pounds. We basically have grown 200 million pounds in that period of time. Put it in cattle terms, it's easier to understand. That's 3.5 million head of cattle that go through the program right now. We think that this number right here is capable of being 1 billion pounds. The demand is out there for the right kind of product. Prime and premium choices are the target of this industry. And with what you're doing with AI, what you're doing with genomics today is really exciting in terms of being able to hit that target. You can get it done. And this is where the demand seems to be really heading. Again, more on that later. Okay, in the essence of time, I'm going to skip past the structure of the industry because it could take a lot of time with this slide, but basically what it tells us, starting with many of you as a cow-calf producer or even above that, a seed stock producer, 700,000 cow-calf producers, and then that calf funnels through to the packer. Ultimately, about 40 to 42% of our product goes through retail. 38 to 40% goes through food service, restaurants, and so on. 11 to 12% goes into international distribution. How is that going to change in the next 5 years? Okay, in the next 5 years, the trends, assuming economic conditions stay in there are, we'll find retail will probably decline just a little bit. Food service and eating out is going up, and I'll talk about some of the trends in that area. And the one that's going to really grow is international. Global, whether we like it or not, is the world that we live in. In our case, we sell about 13 to 14% globally. It's a challenging area to work in, but a tremendous opportunity for the beef industry in this country. And so I'll leave this structure. We could talk almost the whole talk on that, but we'll get into what the consumer is telling us that they want. And if you look at an example, this is some data at Colorado State, not the cleanest slide in the world, but it says that basically 99 to 98% of those consumers, if it was prime, this is prime right here, were very satisfied with their eating experience. If it was in our cab, and we sell a brand extension, Prime, CAB Prime, if it was in our regular CAB, that's upper choice, if it was modest or moderate amount of marbling, 82 to 88%. Folks, this is not good enough. We're working very hard to get that higher. We have a challenge. We've got to get that. We've got to improve that. Tenderness is a part of that whole area. Fat management in terms of that product, how we present those cuts, all of these things. But here's low choice. Only 62% were satisfied from a standpoint of an eating experience. And then when we get down to the selects, 29%. This is an area that when you're that low, you've really got to create some ways of trying to market that product, or else you have to sell this product at a considerably cheaper price. And so as we look at this trend, that's pretty much what the consumer is really in terms of pricing, and it's reflecting back into how grocery stores are selling. Same type data, different school, not going to dwell on it other than touching the fact that when you get to these upper grades like Prime, very little undesirable. In contrast, get to Select. This is a problem for our industry, the price we're selling it for. Okay, what has changed in how we're selling beef? This is where I want to dwell a little bit on, because this area has changed quite a bit in terms of what we're doing. Let's get into the first point of what we're doing, and that is the new cuts. New cuts have really provided some opportunities for the beef industry. Terms that you didn't know of 5 and 10 years ago, like the flat iron, the terrace major, and products like that are presenting tremendous opportunities, because you can go into a restaurant and they can use a terrace major or a flat iron and have a steak sandwich and not have to use a ribeye, a strip, or a tender, or a higher price cut. And it's really added the value to what used to be mother's or grandmother's, probably pot roast, was a chuck cut. Now we're making steaks out of them and selling them at prices underneath the strip steak prices, but well above what you would have sold a chuck pot roast for. So the new cuts have given us a tremendous opportunity. We work very diligently with our restaurants and our retailers to make sure that we share information on how to use these cuts. They're new to the consumer, they're new names, and they have to understand a lot about how to utilize a cut like this. If you get that done, this is a very successful way, and it adds value to the carcass that in essence lets us sell these cattle as live fed cattle for that $1.25, $1.28 a pound or wherever the market's at a given time. Important area. Number two, what has changed? A shift, and I said I'd come back to this. This is a key area of why the prime and the premium choice are bringing a lot of added dollars back to the industry. And let's go back to this window right in here. The economic recession period of time, everything was pretty flat. We were really struggling what beef was going to do. Then what did some of our major retailers start doing? Some of them are stores right in your area. It started with a number of cases, one of which, Costco, which is one of the great marketers of beef in the country. They claim to sell as much choice beef as any other marketer in the United States, and I think they do. They do an excellent job. What did they add to their repertoire of products that has been extremely successful for them? They added Prime. Prime in a grocery store. Wow. And it's been extremely profitable for them. What did other major retailers do? Kroger. Major chain, largest number of stores in the United States, and what did with including some banner stores in Virginia. What did they do? They added basically a premium choice line. And what it did is it increased the demand for that kind of product, and they've added that very successfully into their marketing system throughout the United States. And that has really changed, again, that demand for that upper choice type deal, because this is a group that was not in that market. They were looking for choice product. And traditionally, retail has sold mainly low choice or choice and select as their two-tier offering. Now your tiers have moved up, and that's changed the demand and changed the opportunity for you. Another company, a little itty-bitty company that does a pretty good job of marketing, is called Walmart. What did Walmart do a couple years ago, and what do they say in their ads right now? When you pick up an ad on TV, they say they're serving steakhouse quality beef. They are. They have moved from a low quality select product that was pumped to basically a choice or premium choice product in terms of non-pumped and putting a much higher quality product on. And so when you look at what I showed you earlier of why the demand for prime and premium choice has gone, I've just explained to you from a retail perspective exactly what has transpired and really changed the marketing place. Is it going to go back and change? Is it going to go to lower quality? Folks, it's really hard to then tell your customers, oh, by the way, we're selling a product at the same price, maybe a little cheaper, might even be more expensive depending where beef price goes, but the eating experience will not be nearly as good. That doesn't work. You're going to go to another protein source. And so I think the commitments that have been made in terms of retail is probably here to stay. The third point in terms of that has again really changed how beef is sold and the price that we can sell it for is a concept that I thought when it started, as an old meat lab guy, I thought ground beef is ground beef. You take a little from old cows, you take a little from bulls, you grab a little trim from the outside of the carcass, you throw in an occasional round, and you have ground beef. And the only thing that changes is sometimes it's 90% lean and 10 fat, or 80-20, or 75-25, that's the difference in ground beef. The world has changed, folks, in terms of how we sell ground beef. Ground beef, the premium grinds, have started and really changed the marketplace to the point they're a category in themselves. And that's through companies and restaurants like that you've heard of. I think I saw one here when I drove into town. Companies called Five Guys, Smashburger, Hard Rock. Ever heard of those? You're going to. They're the new restaurant chain in our industry. They're having great success with selling premium ground beef products. They're selling it fresh. And they're doing another thing is they're doing what they call blends. I didn't know what a blend was. A blend is when you take and you take a little bit from the brisket. The brisket as ground beef tastes different than it does from the round or from the sirloin. And you'll use a certain percentage of brisket. You use a certain percentage of sirloin. You use a certain percentage of round meat or chuck meat as an example. And when you put different blends together, I can assure you, if we put a hamburger in front of you, you would taste the difference because blends do create a different flavoring profile. It also changes price, and I'll come to that. But it's amazing to me what we're doing in this. We were in a restaurant just right next door here. I think it's called Mill Street, if I'm not remembering that right, last night. What were they using in their burgers? They were using sirloin. That's not unusual. But they were using tenderloin. Tenderloin in their ground beef. I'm sure those are the tails of that tenderloin, grinding them up, blending them with sirloin, and they were selling a blended product and advertising and promoting that on their menu. That is what we're talking about in blends. And here's what it's done to the price structure. Before, this industry was an industry that it would kill for a quarter pound difference in ground, quarter cent pound difference in price. Today, this is taken off the spreadsheet that we live with every week on a daily basis. If this goes to a restaurant, the price that they're paying for select, the price they're paying for choice were identical. Look at what a premium choice product was bringing, 19 cents a pound higher. If we took prime, I'm sure that would probably be in the vicinity of 30 or 35 cent difference in terms of compared to traditional select or prime. And this is selling. We can't get enough of it. We're grinding parts and trying to do things with ground beef. Ground beef has reinvented itself in terms of a cut in terms of the American consumer. And we're looking at a lot of different ways to try to market it, and it's an exciting area. Let's compare that, for example, top sirloin, corresponding period of time. With top sirloin, you see a spread between select and choice, but you don't see as much of a spread from premium choice to choice. It's 11 cents. A strip steak, yes, is higher there, 38 cents. And that's a comparison of premium choice to, say, select. You're looking at just a little under a couple dollars difference. Therein lies why the consumer's dollars are dictating how price of cattle are really being put together today. This is another part. Okay, you say that's kind of what the packer or the whoever gets that's selling this. What about me? What about me as a producer? I'm a producer. I'm a cow-calf guy. I feed a few calves. This is one of the largest alliances that shared this data with us. Ask their name be not included, but when they started in the 1990s, the top 25% cattle premiums were in the range of $26. By 2003, that had grown to $45. By 2008, it continued to grow to $64. That's a per head value. Look at where it's at in 2013. They're averaging $117. Folks in the cattle business, if you're feeding cattle, this is a huge premium. The opportunity to go after these kind of dollars on differences on a per head basis based on quality, yes, there is some yield in this as well that's figured into this, that's a huge amount of money. guys sitting in this room that I could point to and point out to you would say that 117 is too low. My cattle are the upper 5% or 10%, and I'm at $150. I'm at $200 premium. Those kind of premiums have come into play in the cattle industry. Yes, you have to work at them to figure out a way to get them. You have to get the cattle on a grid type system. You have to get into the right kind of grid system. But these cattlemen are doing that. They're getting it done. And those kind of opportunities are there. And frankly, I don't see them going away. I think that's a huge premium, folks, in terms of an economic opportunity. I'm going to skip past some of these fairly quickly now. Essence of time again. Can we have growth and grade? This is some data put together by Tom Brink at Five Rivers. Basically, in terms of average daily gain, these high growth, high grading type of cattle basically had an average daily gain of 3.5 pounds a day versus 3.25. Not too bad over here. You look at terms of hanging those cattle on the rail. These cattle were basically prime and choice, 73%, 40% over here. This is not very good. 19% acceptance rates on CAB, nothing very special. 5% over here on the lower grading cattle. This is the key part. In this set of cattle put together, there was huge numbers in this, total number of head, over 60,000 head of cattle. The difference is over $80 difference between these cattle that can grow, the cattle that can grade. AI lets you do that. Tremendous opportunity. Look at the net economic effect. Cattle feeders are starting to figure this out. Cattle feeders are figuring out that what you're doing with this reproductive technology you're using changes the value of these cattle. And you'll see more different pricing type systems, I think, evolve over the next 2-3 years where the opportunity. Four quick things on how we can hit this quality target and do this again really quickly. I think genomics is the hottest, neatest new area, I say. And we talk the growth technologies, things like implants, beta agonists, these type of things. You know what the best growth technology of the world is? It's genomics. It's genetics. You guys every day, the AI companies, you folks out there using AI technology, you are the best growth technology, and you're the best growth technology because, one, it works, and two, it's very consumer-friendly. We can talk to the consumer all day long about genomics and the progress we're making and how it creates a positive eating experience. I want you to go out in one of these consumer groups that comes to farm and ranches. I want you to explain how beta agonists, for example, are a positive thing from a consumer standpoint. Very, very difficult to do. Genomics, very, very easy to do. They get excited about what you're doing. We're on the tip of the iceberg in terms of where we're at in the industry. DNA technology, take the time to understand a little more about it. You're going to have presentations here at the conference. Take time to understand that area. We have a reduced platform DNA that we're using for replacement heifers that helps you get these heifers so that the calves those heifers produce can grow and grade. It's called GeneMax. Stop at our booth out here. We'll share a little bit of that information with you. There's one other product like it on the market, so there are basically two of these kind of tests available to the cattle industry today. These type of tests are going to help you produce and select cattle that really work for you down the road, and we're in the tip of the iceberg in that whole area. 5 years from now, conferences like this, you'll be amazed at what you're going to be talking about relative to genetics. Beside that, for example, other areas are going to really impact how cattle will grade. Obviously, nutrition is a part of that whole equation. Health, as it fits in, if you want to make sure that cattle don't grade prime, don't hit a premium choice, get them sick. In fact, get them really good and sick, and then you can make sure you'll have a select grading type product. Health is a critical issue in terms of being able to hit that consumer target. Disposition, for example, is another part of it. So that's a factor, a part of genetic selection, yes. Reproduction. There's some excellent data shared by scientists here in the room that these early-born calves tend to grade a little bit better than some of the others. And so, again, you're going to hear more about that during the course of the conference. The bottom line, I think, is we have a tremendous opportunity in the beef industry to create a product that the consumer absolutely loves. And I think you're doing this through the kind of technology you're using at a conference like this. Commend you for being here. Commend you, the organizing group, for putting this type of thing together. I appreciate the chance to have a chance to share a few of these things with you. I'll be around for the next day and a half, have a chance to mingle with you. Look forward to that. Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.